It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Tyreek Stevenson formally apologized to his teammates on Monday morning, telling the media,
"I let the moment get too big. And it's something that, you know, can never happen again and won't ever happen again."
What's your take on Coach Eberflus declining to say what, if any, punishment would be forthcoming? Eberflus said T.J. Edwards wasn't spying Daniels, but assigned to cover the running back, Austin Eckler, who stayed in pass protection, and Stevenson responsible for guarding Noah Brown, who caught the TD pass. Does Eberflus need to discipline Stevenson? Should he do it publicly to preserve his own reputation?
Yeah, I think I wonder if Matt Eberflus understands the optics of this thing. I really do. I mean, I understand he's a football coach and he has his way of going about things, and he's going to look at preserving his relation. I wonder if he understands what this looks like and how this is going to damage him in terms of his coaching reputation if he sits on his hands. I feel like you've got to show some sort of focus as a coach. You've got to hold people accountable. It's not about whether you like somebody or whether you don't like somebody. It has to do with, you know, not about development, but about repercussion. There are, in life, there are repercussions for actions. If you do something, you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's that simple. And I think it's crazy that we live in a world where you think as a head coach in the NFL that you can get away with just kind of moving on and figuring, well, it'll all go away. It won't, man. These are little chinks in the armor. And you can't have that because the armor protects you. So I think it's very important that he do the right thing, which is to discipline this guy. And he needs to do it so that other players see it, so they get the message too. And he needs to do it, sadly, now, so that everybody knows. I mean, again, if you don't start the guy and you bring him into the game, you're still being a nice guy, but you're saying that, you know, you're still playing him, you're not suspending him, and I don't know how bad the punishment should be, but he has put himself in a position now where I feel like if he does nothing, then he just looks weak. And frankly, there's not a lot of future for weak NFL coaches.
I agree with what you're saying, Mully, but I already think it's too late. Now I feel like it would be public pressure is what is going, like, this should have been done yesterday. And he could have said, "I'm not going to tell you what the punishment is, but you need to trust me that there's a punishment and he will never forget that what he did was wrong." The other person that I would like to hear from, and I want to give the guy credit, we hear from Ryan Poles quite a bit compared to his predecessor. But you know, it would have been Ryan Poles coming down and talking about the culture. They're big on culture. That was a checkmark against culture, what happened on Sunday. It would have been nice to hear from him. He could have sat shoulder to shoulder with his head coach and said, "We've got this. We've addressed it inside the building. It's none of your damn business what's going to happen." But he will never forget this moment. And then, okay, I could have accepted that. This is one where I don't think we need to know. And maybe it would be being benched, and we would see that at the beginning of the game. That's okay. He doesn't need to tell us that now. He doesn't need to give the Arizona Cardinals that tip that they're going to suspend him, not bring him with on the airplane. But he should have done that already, and now I think it's too late, and it would be caving to public pressure.
Well, they need to cave. If that's the case, they need to stop worrying about those things. They need to make a statement that will be respected by the rest of the locker room. Right now, at this point, it might be too late to reverse the tidal wave of negative opinions about or perceptions about how weak Matt Eberflus is as a head coach. But you can still make Tyreek Stevenson a healthy scratch and make a statement without giving the Cardinals any sort of indication that you are going to do that if it matters. because right now you have a credibility problem and deficit if you're Matt Eberflus. I think a lot of us have keep waiting for him to assert himself in a way that maybe wishful thinking. This may maybe not who he is. Some guys are just very good coordinators in the NFL coaching ranks and not very good head coaches. Matt Eberflus is leaning heavily in that direction. He needed a show of strength yesterday, and he was weak. I would have been fine with Ryan Poles showing up and reminding people what the culture is at House Hall or what they want it to be and why they won't tolerate such behavior. Look, the flower, as we call him, he didn't wilt when Romeo Doubs did something that was detrimental to the football team. They suspended the guy who was part of their big, big part of their passing game. That was strength. That's what a head coach does in the NFL. Matt Eberflus said, well, you know, he talked to the team, wishy-washy Matt Eberflus. That is who he is right now. He's got players questioning him publicly. He's got I wonder about his support internally, but he doesn't feel strong enough to assert that kind of authority, and he needs it right now. This is the most important week of Matt Eberflus's head coaching career, because if he doesn't view it that week, it won't last very long.
And that's the big question, right?
That's Brad Biggs. He'll be here at 7. Biggs time. How should the Bears approach their left tackle situation? Braxton Jones expected to be week to week with a knee. Is rookie Kieran Amagaji from Yale and Hinsdale Central the answer, or just an uncomfortable question?
I don't think he's ready. I don't think Amagaji looks ready for prime time. I think he was pressed into action. He was active, so he had to play, and he was exposed. Now, we can overstate the significance of the block he made on the run around the edges, and he got out on the perimeter and he blocked the cornerback twice, and that was fine, and he had a moment, and there were other moments where he did not look overmatched. But if you watch the tape, slow it down, and you see there, pass protection remains a problem, and I don't know what the Bears do about it, because they've got to get people healthy. You can't just go out in the trade market. There aren't left tackles just waiting to be obtained or acquired for draft capital or other players. That's not the way it works. I think you're going to have to be practical here. And practically speaking, is Larry Borum healthy? Can he be activated? If not, can Matt Pryor swing over to play left tackle and you slide in somebody at right guard? Then you might maybe think, okay, I would rather go back to Nate Davis in all of his reticence and mystery. I would rather go back to a veteran who has done the job before than a rookie who hasn't. And I think that would be probably plan B or plan A, however you want to categorize it. But I don't think plan A should be Amagaji. I think that he would be a guy that still needs some development, and that was obvious on Sunday.
Yeah, I think if I'm in charge, I'm putting Matt Pryor over there for a week. He's probably your best option. He's a mountain of a man. Then the question becomes, do you take David's guy, the mini fridge, and do you plug him back in and have him take over at right guard because you're moving Pryor out to left tackle, or is it Nate Davis? And boy, what would it say if Doug Kramer was in there playing right guard and Nate Davis was the backup? Because I think Nate Davis would have to be the backup, because you'd need to have somebody in case the center goes down, and then you got to move Kramer over there, and Nate Davis could also, I think, get away with a couple of snaps at center. But all of a sudden, then Nate Davis is your swing inside guy.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is real simple. You move Matt Pryor before he became your right guard was your swing tackle. So you move your swing tackle back to left tackle. Borum can be his backup for a week, see if he can get better. Where yet with Bates? He needs a couple more weeks, whatever. Nate Davis is my starting right guard. That's it. You're back, you're active, and you're starting. You better do the job. Nate Davis had one foot out the door, okay? Nate Davis was on what we like to call Velus Jones watch. I think he'd have been cut by the trade deadline. Maybe they're hanging on to him to see if they can get any kind of movement. I don't think they can. But he's got no future with this team. So now he's got an opportunity. Now he's back in the starting lineup in my team. The other thing is, I don't know if I'm not sure if Tevin Jenkins is ready to go.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're going to see an injury report. So you may, you know, if you want to move Doug Kramer, if you want to figure out if you can bring back Larry Borum, you might need him to play quickly too.
If Doug Kramer starts at right guard, who is the fullback on third and short?
Oh, that's just so mean.
Nate Davis.
Hashtag bear down.
Because everybody's pretty much asking the same question.
That's the voice of Coach Wanstead. He'll be in studio with the guys 7:40 to 8:20. Did you like hearing safety Kevin Byard reveal he had a conversation with Matt Eberflus about both the defense on the Hail Mary disaster and the defense on the 13-yard completion, the play before? Byard said he personally would be in favor of pressing the cornerback on the first play, and if they go vertical, it's still a pass of about 10 yards short of the end zone.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, things happen the way it happened. Could we have sent pressure? Maybe, you know what I mean? But he made the call, and, you know, that's what it was.
Do you like what you heard there from Kevin Byard?
I thought Kevin Byard made a lot of sense. I think he'd make a good defensive coordinator. I think that play, that giving them 13 yards was idiotic. And if you heard, apparently Flusie's thinking was that if you defended them on the 13-yard play, they would just go deep anyway. They would just go vertical and they would try to throw the ball. They go for a Hail Mary on that play. Well, isn't that a lot better than a Hail Mary into the end zone?
I can't fathom what he was meaning. It was nonsensical.
But it made zero sense. If a guy catches the ball on the 20, how's he going to get past everyone? I mean, and let's say they decide to go vertical. Certainly your corners can stay with them. And if the guy catches a 61-yard pass, didn't they tackle him the last time?
Yes.
I mean, I just, the logic of Eberflus was nonsensical. That's where the game was lost. You needed that to happen so that you could get to the Hail Mary, but it took misplaying the Hail Mary as well. So, yes, I think we know, do not let the quarterback run around for 12.8 seconds before he unloads a pass. And maybe have your players aware of what is going on. A timeout there, you could have had a moment where you were, all right, wait a minute, guys, here's what we're going to do. And instead, you let them get that 13 yards to set up the big throw, and now the rest is history.
Yeah, you can't take the timeouts with you. So him leaving the field with three timeouts, pretty bad look. And then being defiant, pretty bad look. And he said right away, and it's got to be tough. I sat there and thought, wow, how tough of a job does Matt Eberflus have right now? The game ends the way it ends. He has to go in and address his team quickly. Then he has to get out there and address the media. That's not easy. And kind of wrap your mind around it and not sound. You got to compartmentalize everything that just happened. And he said, if I remember it right, he said they were defending touchdowns, right? They were defending against the touchdown. But the other problem with that is it was a 3-point game at that point, right? And a 50-yard field goals nowadays are kind of like chip shots in the NFL. So you were even potentially willing to give up enough yardage that they could have
that
lined up.
That was my initial worry watching the game.
That they could have lined up for a game tying
field goal. Thinking that's what they were trying to do.
It wasn't like, if they were up four, right. If they were up four, I could have maybe been on Eberflus's side, but not calling timeouts in that situation was stupid.
Well, Byard didn't necessarily allude to that specifically, but I agree with you, Dustin. The lack of a timeout was an egregious error. That word's coming up a lot this week. The fact that Matt Eberflus defended the idea of not having more tighter coverage and essentially surrendering, giving up, inviting the Commanders to gain 15 yards. It was only 13, but it allowed Jaden Daniels. This is the simple math and the failed logic, and I don't understand why Flusie keeps reinforcing this. The ball traveled in the air about 65 yards, and when it came down, Noah Brown was in the end zone.
Yes.
If you move that back 15 yards or 13 yards, he's not in the end zone and conceivably could be tackled short of the goal line. Do you remember years ago?
DJ Moore, didn't he catch one at the end of the game on the 1 yard line?
Yes, but also
halftime of a game this year.
And you remember Kevin White, the first round draft pick against the Patriots years ago, about 5 years ago. He caught a Hail Mary and he came just short.
Yes.
These things happen because every yard matters. You can't surrender yardage like that and just be okay with it. It was terrible in terms of planning for that. It was worse when he defended it.
Yeah.
It was a bad decision. Kevin Byard is saying what everybody in Chicago is thinking, and good for him.
Molly, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's Jared Payton. He'll be here at 9. What should we make of Cole Kmet saying this about the Bears' practice focus last week?
I think it's a really a good lesson for everybody to learn from in terms of how to respect the game. And I think we had examples of that throughout the game and quite frankly throughout the week of practice this past week, where you know there's moments where maybe some guys lay off here and there, and those are the type of things that can happen when you do that for just a split second. And you know, it doesn't always come to bite you in the butt, but when it does, it hurts. And that's the unfortunate, and I would also say beauty of this game, is that you know, you disrespect it in a certain way, and it'll come to haunt you in some form of fashion. So I think it's a learning experience for everybody. We all play with a lot of passion. Tyreek plays with a lot of passion, and we all love him for that. But there's definitely a respect level of the game, and knowing that you got to finish it out until those double zeros at the clock.
Some guys lay off here or there. Wow. Heavy words from Cole Kmet.
Terrible indictment of the entire organization. Paging Ryan Poles. Your culture is infected with lackadaisical attitudes. That is what's happened with the Bears. Somehow, they got full of themselves during the bye week. Somehow, their 4-2 start made them convinced that they were ready for prime time. They're not. This is still a losing football team, a losing football culture, a losing football organization. They know how to lose better than they know how to do anything else. And now they're going to manufacture their own adversity, and they'll overcome it and maybe win a game and give themselves credit for it. You know what that is? That's the Bears' way. Cole Kmet talking about giving voice to, acknowledging the fact that the Bears didn't practice hard last week, because why? They barely practiced at all. The Players Association has made it so they barely practiced during off weeks. This was honesty from a guy that is now very candid and a great spokesman for that team. This is a problem. Do you think that the math on the Hail Mary and Tyreek Stevenson, they're all problems, and this is as big as any?
Well, I appreciate what all these guys say as a fan and as somebody who works in sports talk radio. But if I worked for the Bears, I would hate this. I would hate how open these guys are being. These guys are really taking you into Halas Hall, which they do not want us, the fans, or us, the media, to know about what's happening. They want to keep their business in-house. That's what they want. And I'm sure that's going to be addressed come Wednesday when they get the whole team together. Like, guys, come on. Like, this is not helping. We need to circle the wagons. It's got to be about us versus them. Keep, you know, the players are now adding to the outside noise. They're supporting what we are saying by saying this. We thought something was wrong. They're telling us that there is something wrong. We now just don't think it. According to these players, we know it. That's a problem.
Listen, this is a real problem. This organization needs to sit up and take notice, because this is the group that had to get rid of not one, but two coaches a year ago. And they told us that it's proof of how great their culture is that they got rid of people. And then it turns out they only get rid of people, they don't discipline people. If you disrespect the game, then you're going to feel it, and you better know about it. If you're on the practice field and you're cutting corners, it was amazing to talk to Olin and Pat about this stuff in the post game, because part of what they're talking about, part of what a culture is, you're a veteran player and you see a guy that isn't paying attention while you're doing your whatever 100 walkthroughs of the of the defense for a Hail Mary play. And you say to the guy, hey, did you hear what you're supposed to do? Tell me what your job is on that play. You're not paying attention. That's what you do. Culture is calling out people when they're not doing things. Culture is going into the weight room, and if someone decides, well, it doesn't matter if I do 9 reps instead of 12, who cares? There's no one watching. Your teammate sees it. Hey, finish your reps. That's what the culture is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, well, look at us. We're 4-2. We beat a bunch of bad teams. We're on fire. It doesn't matter if I pay attention. I got to tell you, you know, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, whoever, you better listen. You know, Dustin, you might not want to hear it. I'm sure they hate it, but you need this information because this is what's going to fuel the coach's firing. And I hope he understands that. You know, you want to keep your job, you better sit up and take notice.
Ask Mark Trestman.
Hey.
Anybody.
You know, let me ask you this. I don't want a coach to act like a fool. I don't want somebody to come out and be an idiot. But, yeah, I think I would prefer to see Nick Sirianni scream at booing fans than hear a coach say, oh, no, well, we did that the right way because we wanted them to have to throw a... No,
I know what you're saying.
That's nonsensical.
I don't know if I want a coach yelling at fans.
I'm not promoting that.
I think we both want to hear a coach that's bothered, seems bothered or perturbed by what's going on.
Yeah, don't try to sell me on how you did a great job getting back in the game. That's dead to me because you figured out how to lose it because you got a guy with his back to the play who's pointing at the crowd and yelling at people. Wake up now.
Different question on a different topic.
That's the voice of Mike Florio, 844. What did you think of the Bulls' performance in Memphis? Coby White, he's been streaky. You expect these wild swings to continue?
You know, I think the Bulls are a young team kind of figuring out how to play. I think they're playing a style that is keeping them in games. They went down. Did they go down 20 in that game? That was a blowout. Looked like it could be a blowout loss, but they kept doing their thing and they knocked down shot after shot. It was fun to see. They have played 4 games and they're 2-2. And I think after the season opener, we thought they wouldn't win in October. So I kind of like what they're doing. I think Billy's doing a great job. They got to figure out, I think maybe the rookie needs to go down to play in Hoffman Estates. I nearly said Rockford again. And I think that might help him a little bit, but I'm all for what they're doing. I think 2-2 speaks volumes. This is the same. This kind of follows the pattern of what happened in Milwaukee. It's a great win yesterday for the Bears. They got 2 wins on the road. Pretty impressive.
Let's keep in mind, like, John Morant didn't play. Okay, the superstar for the Grizzlies was not there on the
look
court.
Look at you.
Okay, they did come back from 20.
Zion didn't play, and they got blown out.
Oh, right. Well, thank you. That's my, like, I mean, okay, like, let's have some consistency. Zach doesn't need to score 30 every night, but I'd bet money that the next game against Orlando, he'll have 12 or less points.
Did you not eat breakfast today?
No way. I've had one of my two hard-boiled eggs. What do you mean? Come on, what? You
want they me to, 25
you want me to drink the red Kool-Aid this morning because they came back from 20?
Yes. Okay, great. Dude, you should be...
Dude.
Yeah, you should be the one celebrating them because you're the one who said they were going out for October.
25 and 53.
And you agreed with me.
I agreed, but yeah. I didn't okay. come up with it.
But you thought it was a good idea enough faith. To hit your wagon to
oh,
it.
I was wrong. Faith. I said I was wrong.
No! 25 of 53 from three-point land.
Dude.
Zach LaVine is a bona fide NBA scorer. He can get buckets with the best of them when he gets hot. And I know he's for some reason, this is always going to nag me a little bit. I understand the numbers and people want to call him not a winning player, which seems to be a label that has stuck. But boy, Zach LaVine, he has done a lot in this town that has been underappreciated. I'm not going to say unappreciated. I'll say underappreciated. And when he goes on a run like he did last night, you start to ask yourself, like, why has this guy been mocked, derided? Like, guys who call him nicknames that he doesn't necessarily deserve.
Wow.
Good for Zach LaVine. Good for the Bulls.
Are you talking about Duke?
They are fun to watch, dude.
Max LaVine.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
How would you describe the World Series through three games? Was it smart to play Shohei Ohtani or not?
Apparently, he was wincing in pain. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Ohtani's playing hurt. Give him some credit. I think that this is the World Series. He's rising to the occasion. We're going to find out after the World Series. He probably dislocated something. And they is worse than we think. But give him credit for that. The Dodgers, boy, they're deep. They're talented. They're, I don't think, this much better than the Yankees. But Aaron Judge is in a deep, deep slump. He's going to hear about this all offseason and longer. And the Dodgers are doing everything right. They're getting good pitching. Freddie Freeman is on a tear. Five straight World Series games in which he has homered. That's going to get him into the Hall of Fame. So the World Series, frankly, has been a little disappointing because of all the hype. But let's hope it goes six, but I doubt that it does.
It's over. It's all over. World Series is done. It'll probably end tonight. Freddie Freeman is a MVP and a Hall of Famer. And Ohtani was like in that sling literally until like he went up to bat. He had his arm in a sling off and on, off and on. So kudos to him playing hurt. He walks in his first at bat last night, leadoff walk, and then two hitters later, Freddie Freeman, boom, out to right field, and right away it's 2-0 Dodgers. They'll probably win tonight.
This was a word I would use to describe it. Let's see. How about blowout? How about rout? How about non-competitive? God bless the Yankees. They were in the first game for a while. They've been routed in this series up to this point, and there's no way back in. There's not a chance that they're going to win the World Series at this point. And Freddie Freeman, you know, you said that just casually that he's going to make the Hall of Fame now. Freddie Freeman has hit a homer in, what, five straight World Series games? Holy cow. I mean, it's a pity that wasn't Anthony Rizzo. Then we could have a real conversation. It was a pity that he wasn't doing something spectacular. Instead, the conversation is probably, you know, will he play again next year? Certainly not with the Yankees, right? I think we're looking at...
Where's he going to play? Chicago?
No. Are you going to taunt me Dustin style?
Don't know.
That seems like where we're headed. Wow.
I'm not taunting you Dustin style. I just got compared to Dustin, dude.
Kopech.
Oh, the Kopech.
Daddy Kopech over here.
Okay, sorry.
Am I just a ball of yarn for yes. you to knock around in your cat-like paws? God.
I'm sorry.
I'm so wounded now.
you got to stop thinking about Kopech.
Maybe the Sox can sign a broken down back, you know, injured former Cub.